This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In this edition today, our bulletin of church news that will be followed by Panorama and then our feature of Echo of the African Synod. Today we shall close with a segment dedicated to Millennium Appointment. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Pope Francis on Monday sent a message to the 7th Indigenous Peoples Forum organized by the United Nations International Fund for Agricultural Development, IFAD. The two-day gathering, which began on Monday 10th February, ends on Tuesday the 11th. The theme of the event that is taking place in Rome is Indigenous Peoples' Right to Self-Determination, a Pathway for Food Security and Sovereignty. Devin Watkins tells us more.
In his message, the Pope noted that land, water, and food are not mere commodities, but the very foundation of life and the bond of indigenous peoples with nature. He said they have the right to preserve their identity, but noted that this right is severely threatened by the increasing seizures of farmland by multinational corporations and states. These seizures, he lamented, cause much harm to indigenous peoples and put at risk communities' right to a dignified life. The defense of the right to preserve one's culture and identity requires the recognition of the value of their contribution to society, he said, as well as the safeguarding of their existence and the natural resources essential for their livelihood. Pope Francis added that defense of indigenous people's rights is a matter of justice, along with a way to guarantee a sustainable future for all humanity. Driven by our sense of belonging to the human family, he said, we can ensure that future generations enjoy a world in harmony with the beauty and goodness that guided God's hand in creation. The Pope praised the heritage of indigenous peoples, saying their ancestral traditions reveal a horizon of hope in our present time that is marked by intense and complex challenges and numerous tensions. In conclusion, Pope Francis prayed that efforts to protect the rights and traditions of indigenous peoples may bear fruit. I pray to Almighty God that these efforts, he said, may serve as an inspiration to the leaders of nations so that appropriate measures are taken to ensure that the human family walks together in pursuit of the common good, leaving no one excluded or forgotten. I'm Devin Watkins.
The appointments of Pope Francis on Monday morning began with a meeting with Archbishop Giorgio Lingua, the Apostolic Nuncio in Croatia. After that encounter, the Holy Father received in private audience the president of the Episcopal Conference of the Catholic Bishops of Madagascar, Monseigneur Marie-Fabien Samuelin Raharilamboniaina, who is also the bishop of the country's diocese of Morondava. He was accompanied by the vice president of the conference, Jean-Pasco Andriantsuavina of Antsirabe Diocese, and the secretary general of the Madagascar Episcopal Conference of Catholic Bishops, Monseigneur Jean-Claude Rakotuarisoa of Miarinarivo Diocese. In other appointments on Monday, Pope Francis received in audience Madame Kaja Kallas, the High Representative of the European Union for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy, Dr. Khalid El Enani, the current candidate for the post of Director General of UNESCO, and the Rector of the Grand Mosque of Paris, Mr. Chemzedin Hafiz. The Pope's last appointment on Monday was with the Russian painter, Mr. Nikas Safronov. Let's prioritize a resolution that fosters human dignity in the Democratic Republic of Congo. This is the appeal of the Catholic Bishops of the Association of Episcopal Conferences of Central Africa, ASIAC for short. This jurisdiction of the regrouping of Catholic bishops comprises the ordinaries from Burundi, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Rwanda. The concern of the bishops is also directed at regional, continental, and global leaders whom they urge to weigh in on the crisis in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Their petition is contained in a statement published on Sunday, February 9th, in which they lament the violent conflict which has reportedly resulted in thousands of deaths, massive displacement, and a worsening humanitarian crisis With a bleeding heart, we share the grief of all those who have lost family members or loved ones, both in the ranks of the troops and of innocent civilians, including young children, the Catholic bishops say in the statement. We call on the representative of political powers in the sub-region, Africa, and the rest of the world, in accordance with their areas of responsibility, to work towards a resolution of the crisis that gives priority to promoting the dignity of each and every person and respect for the rights of individuals and peoples. The ASIAC bishops say, the Catholic Church leaders say further that it is the conscience and the duty of interhuman solidarity to come to the aid of the battered people and to contend the harmful realities of war. Bernardo Baribuno is the country representative of the British International Catholic Charity, CAFOLD. He told Vatican Radio's Linda Bodoni that the Catholic Church is always commendable for always being on the side of the afflicted.
I understand that CAFOLD is one of the few, if not the only, humanitarian agency on the ground in Goma at the moment. Am I correct?
Yes, we are. No, whenever the crisis starts, the Catholic Church is always there before and during and after the crisis. And I think this is a testament of that. The Church have been through the crisis and now they are quickly responding while everyone else, or at least many other organizations, have left the area. So soon as the Goma town was taken, before even the internet was reestablished in town, we were already in contact with Caritas Goma.
Country representative of the British International Catholic Charity, CAFOLD, Bernard Baribuno, talking to Vatican Radio's Linda Bodoni. The Justice and Peace Commission of the Southern African Catholic Bishops Conference has demanded justice for the 2017-2018 listeriosis outbreak victims, urging the involved private sector to take responsibility rather than hiding behind legal technicalities. South Africa's largest food company, Tiger Brands, was reportedly responsible for a severe foodborne disease outbreak that was linked to ready-to-eat processed meat products from one of its production facilities. The outbreak resulted in hundreds of fatalities. You are tuned to the Daily Africa service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
The head of the military in Sudan, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, has called for diplomatic support for a new government he intends to form when the National Army completes the recapture of the capital Khartoum from the rebel Rapid Supportive Forces. The army is reported to have taken most of Khartoum in the past weeks. General Burhan met politicians who backed the army over the weekend and expressed his intention to form a technocratic wartime government with a prime minister. He said there would be a new constitution before the formation of the transitional government, but ruled out negotiations with the Rapid Supportive Forces. The conflict in Sudan has killed tens of thousands of people and displaced 12 million others, with some crossing into neighboring countries. Reports from Libya say a mass grave containing 28 bodies of migrants was discovered at the weekend in the city of Kufra in the southeast of the country. The discovery comes just days after another mass grave with 19 bodies was found on a farm in the same city. Police said they found the grave following a raid on a human trafficking site where 76 migrants who had been detained and tortured were freed. Most of the freed migrants and the dead were from sub-Saharan Africa. Reports from South Africa say groups representing some of South Africa's white minority have rejected a plan by U.S. President Donald Trump, who last week offered them refugee status and resettlement in the United States on grounds that they are marginalized by the South African government. The plan is in an executive order Trump signed last Friday that stopped all aid and financial assistance to South Africa as a punishment for what Trump said were rights violations by the government against some of its white citizens. Mr. Trump accused the South African government of allowing violent attacks on white African farmers and of introducing a land expropriation law that enables it to seize ethnic minority Afrikaners' agricultural property without compensation. On Saturday, two of the most prominent groups representing Afrikaners said they would not be taking up Trump's offer of resettlement in the United States of America. You are tuned to the English Africa service of Vatican Radio.
The African Synod, the Church Alive in Africa Today.
Hello and welcome to the program. I am Festus Tarawali. In this edition, we shine a spotlight on the role of military chaplaincies, and you can hear from two priests who have served in the military ordinariates in Kenya and South Africa. A military ordinariate is an ecclesiastical jurisdiction responsible for the pastoral care of people serving in the armed forces of a nation. As you may have heard in our last program, Pope Francis on Sunday presided over Mass in St. Peter's Square on the occasion of the Jubilee of the Armed Forces, Police and Security Personnel. In remarks before the recitation of the Angelus at the end of the Mass, the Pope reminded soldiers, police and other law enforcement officials from around the world that armed force can only be used for legitimate defense and must always respect international law. In recalling the teaching of the Church in this regard, the Pope said the Second Vatican Council says that those who exercise their profession in the ranks of the army in the service of their homeland should consider themselves as servants of the security and freedom of their people. This armed service, continued the Pope, must be exercised only for legitimate defense, never to impose dominion over other nations, and always observing international conventions regarding conflicts. And before that, in sacred respect for life and creation, the Pope added. In a part of his homily read by an aide during the Mass, the Pope spoke about the role of chaplains in the armed forces. He said, in carrying out your work, which embraces your whole life, you are accompanied by your chaplains, an important priestly presence in your midst. Their job is not, as at times unfortunately happened in history, to bless perverse acts of war. No, they are in your midst as the presence of Christ, who desires to work at your side, to offer you a listening and sympathetic ear, to encourage you to set out ever anew, and to support you in your daily service, said the Pope. As a source of moral and spiritual support, your chaplains accompany you at every step and help you to carry out your mission in the light of the gospel and in the pursuit of the common good, the Pope added. In view of this past Sunday's Jubilee Mass for the armed forces, Sheila Pirish spoke to Father Silas Rangwaga, a priest who has served for over 2 decades as chaplain in the military ordinariate of the South African Defence Forces, the SADF. She began by asking him about how he became a chaplain for the military.
Long story, but to cut it short, in 1997 I was asked by the Archbishop, retired Archbishop George Daniel, if I would be interested to be a military chaplain. And of course, being young that time, I was just ordained 5 years, and so I was fit. And then, so I thought, let me go and try it and see how it works in the military. And then, now of course, I was fit, so I joined.
And it's been like that for the past 27 years.
It's been 27 years now.
So tell us, what is it to be a military chaplain? What is your role? What is your function?
The primary role as a, as a priest, the sacred duty takes precedence over all other tasks. But of course, as a military chaplain, the primary role is that you are advisor to the commanders and to the military at large. And you care for the soldiers and their families, spiritually, morally, and socially. So you look after the military and their family members. And those are, I think that is the primary role. And again, of course, there's an advisor to the commanders in terms of religious activities. All the religious activities, of course, you'll be asked to perform your religious rites, regardless of your denomination. Because when you become a military chaplain, you know, like you work interdenominationally and, of course, interfaith. I'm talking about other faith as well, because you are there for everyone in the military. You're not only there for Christians or the Catholics.
So over the years, over your 27 years, what sort of functions have you served? Not necessarily functions, but over the 27 years, where have you been to? Do you travel with the soldiers, or do you only assist them as they depart from South Africa? What is it like?
As a military chaplain, you are there with your soldiers. We talk about ministry by presence in the military, meaning that you are there with your soldiers when they are doing the training. You are there when they are in offices, when they are deployed, either internally or externally, you're also there. So you are there with your soldiers full time. And of course, also, we find that you also visit some courses. You also have soldiers that are also within the borders of South Africa, or beyond the borders, are doing different courses. So you also visit.
And speaking of courses, I believe you've been to Rome as well. You've had several meetings with other military chaplains.
It has been my privilege, and you know, I'm so grateful that the two retired bishops, Bishop Joe Daniel and Bishop Slattery, they afforded me the opportunity to attend the meetings in Rome, a few meetings in Rome, meeting all other military bishops as well, and military chaplains, especially the Catholics. So it has been a wonderful experience, I must say, and a learning experience.
So what exactly happens in these meetings when you meet as chaplains?
When we meet as chaplains, we discuss mainly about our functions and our roles in different militaries. And we share experiences. You know, of course, also get some challenges, the frustrations as we encounter in the military.
That was Father Silas Rangwaga, a military chaplain with the South African Defense Forces, speaking there to Sheila Purish. Retired Colonel Benjamin Maswili of the Apostles of Jesus Congregation served as Apostolic Administrator of the Military Ordinariate in Kenya from 2017 to the 30th of January this year. In this archive interview with Father Paul Samosumo, he spoke about the role of the chaplain in the armed forces, including in conflict zones.
The first thing is chaplains is part of the welfare of their soldiers. So wherever these soldiers are moving, we move with them. When the troops of Kenya went to Somalia looking for peace, also the chaplains accompanied their soldiers. Both the chaplains and the catechists, they all move together. So we are supporting that way.
When you are there in the field, are you afraid for your life? How are you protected?
It is a sacrifice, because you must reach the soldiers wherever they are. Even if it is they are fighting or they are in stretch, you have to end up with them. So even if they are in the front line, sometimes you are asked to go either to counsel them, to give them sacraments, others need conversion, others need Holy Communion, and you have to do that. But always you are protected because you are non-combatant. When you go to see them, you don't carry any weapon. You are just escorted by the other soldiers, protected, and you do your job.
Part of the problem is also their families whom they live by, and they are out on a mission for a long time. Is there a way that you link with the families? You spoke about counseling.
Yeah, before the soldiers go for their operation, the first thing we counsel them. We give them counseling as a troop. And then also we counsel their family, because sometimes their family want them to be tied together. And this soldier may go and they come with one leg, And this, when he leaves also, the family may have another problem. So we counsel them and bring them to understand this work is not that his. So we link the family. Even when they are for operations, also we link them with their families. We tell the families how they are doing. And also we send a message to the soldiers to tell them their families are doing well, so that psychologically these soldiers are settled and they do their work properly.
There is what is being known and referred to as post-traumatic syndrome. When they come back, how they cope, is there some follow-up?
Yeah, from also when they come back from their operations, we counsel them before they join their family. So we call them, we counsel them, and then we bring them together with their family also and give them counseling so that they stay in harmony.
That was retired Colonel Father Benjamin Maswili of the Apostles of Jesus Congregation, a former apostolic administrator of the military ordinariate in Kenya. And that's all for this edition of the African Synod, The Church Alive in Africa Today. Until the same time next week, I am Festus Tarawali.
And now, our feature, Millennium Appointment. The prefect of the Dicastery for Promoting Christian Unity, Cardinal Kurt Koch, has invited Catholics to reject the extreme positions on the Second Vatican Council. The two positions can be summed up as traditionalist and progressives. Traditionalist Catholics feel that the reforms of the Second Vatican Council contradict the historic teachings of the Catholic Church and brought in modernism that has made the Church more liberal and the faithful less interested in the faith. In their view, the fundamental teachings of the faith have been greatly watered down and in some cases completely abrogated altogether. In the views of the traditions, the Catholic Church has lost its status as the unique and exclusive church founded by Christ and has become one of the many routes to reach God. Progressive Catholics, on the other hand, believe that the Council was pastoral in nature, whose goal was to open a new dialogue with the modern world, to look more deeply into the Catholic past in order to prepare for the Catholic future, and to usher in an era of evangelization and renewal. Speaking at the weekend at the Catholic University of Valencia in Spain, which awarded him a doctoral honorary degree, Cardinal Koch reflected on the tension between the two essential parts of the Second Vatican Council, that is, fidelity to the sources and fidelity to the signs of the times. He said the Church has always embraced these two positions, but tension crept in after the Second Vatican Council, which defined a new position without watering down the faith. He explained that both the progressives and the traditionalists conceive of the Second Vatican Council as a departure from the real teaching of Christ. The progressives believe that the rapture occurred after the Council due to wrong interpretations of the Council's documents, while the traditionalists believe that the rapture occurred during the deliberations of the Council itself. Cardinal Koch stressed that the two positions do not interpret the Second Vatican Council within the general tradition of the Church. He said the Council opened the Church to dialogue with the world, but the Church should not be confused with the world. It is in the world, but not of the world. He added that the Second Vatican Council reform of the Church consists in the elimination of what is not real, through the process of purification of the Church based on its origins, so that the form of the one Church willed by Christ can become visible again. The Cardinal concluded his discussion noting that the Council wanted to proclaim the Catholic faith in a way that was both faithful to its origins and appropriate to the times, in order to be able to transmit the truth and beauty of the faith to the people of today, so that they can understand it and accept it as an aid to their lives. The Second Vatican Council, Cardinal Koch stressed, did not create a new church in rupture with the tradition, nor did it conceive a different faith.
but rather it aimed at a renewal of faith and a church renewed on the basis of the spirit of the Christian message that has been revealed once and for all and transmitted in the living tradition of the church. And lastly, you may have heard last week that a man desecrated the main altar of St. Peter's Basilica here in the Vatican by climbing on top of it and threw on the floor 6 candle holders that were on the altar. After throwing the candle holders, the man is seen in a video taken by cameras in the basilica, removing the altar cloth. The Vatican said at the weekend that the man was a Romanian national and was quickly detained by Vatican security agents after the basilica's alarm was activated when he stood on the altar. It was later discovered that he is suffering from a serious mental disorder. He is currently in the custody of Italian police. In 2023, a similar incident happened when a man climbed the high altar and undressed, after which he was arrested. The desecration of a place of worship is outlawed by church law, also known as canon law. Canon 1210 of the Code of Canon Law states that only things which serve the exercise or promotion of worship, piety, or religion are permitted in a sacred place. Anything not consonant with the holiness of the place is forbidden. And with that, we come to the end of this week's edition of Millennium Appointment. This has been John Baptist Tumusime.
This is the Africa Service of Vatican Radio, and remember to join us again at the same time tomorrow. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.